Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Great is the love poured out for all, everybody. Welcome to the Football Ramble. England won again and Luxembourg sensationally beat the Irish. It's Monday, 29th of March. I'm Marcus Speller.
I'm Vidusha Nantharaja.
And I'm Jim Campbell. Easy. We're on for it, boys. Come on. Big Monday vibes.
Massive vibes.
God, the biggest of the vibes. Let's enjoy it until Robert Lewandowski comes to town. On
why do they keep playing us? What are they? You know, annoying, why do they keep stepping up to us?
It feels personal now,
yeah,
doesn't it?
Just get out of the way.
Yeah.
You, stay at home.
You got your draw in 1973. Now, sod off.
We'll give you a little BBC or ITV montage. We might even give you a poem, but don't make us get out onto that grubby little field with you.
Oh, dearie me. Yes, everybody. It's another international week. Doesn't it make you feel good, Jim?
It does after an England win, yeah?
Yeah, damn right. This one was a bit more meaningful than San Marino, you'd argue.
Yeah. I mean, well, same amount of points.
Same amount of points, same amount of clean sheets.
Dispatch them, same amount of clean sheets.
Should they be playing? You know, come to the same argument afterwards. Should they be playing? Should they be allowed to be on the field with our brave boys?
Is there an argument that any team England beats should have to play a sort of preliminary qualifying campaign to get to the qualifications?
Yeah, I think so.
Is England the bar? If you lose to England, then you've got to be in that.
Did you notice neither San Marino nor Albania gave England the Guard of Honour, which I think is disgraceful.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, Albania, they didn't even have a single shot on target.
No.
Scared. What's that about,
too
eh?
Scared.
Tell you what, though, they could have gone 1-0 off early on in that game.
There is that.
That was like, oh, yeah, that's why we might need a back three against bigger teams, an extra defender in there. But all joking aside, though, it was your classic routine win, Vish. We've seen England do this many times against a stubborn opponent who recently have been at a tournament. You know, they're no mugs, Albania, of course. But you've got to go there. You've got to do the job. And England did the job.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we should probably look at this result and we'll take a step back to look at it in full view in terms of it's the second of three games in the space of what, like just under a week for a team that aren't really together training and on the eve of a Euros where we're at the same time trying to work out not even really our best, well, I suppose our best formation, best 11, but more broadly, you know, the players who are going to make up the rest of that squad, those will be where some of the hardest decisions are made. Certainly the first hard decision anyway. So, I was quietly impressed with how they went. Again, I was very impressed with Mason Mount. I thought the conversations about two defensive midfielders were slightly disingenuous the two individuals who were doing that particular job, Calvin Phillips and Declan Rice, two very different holding midfielders who neither really are, you know, I think to describe them as holding midfielders does them a bit of an injustice really because they're so good at what they do. And you only need to look at how well their teams, the respective teams are doing and how important they are to those teams to realise they're not just, you know, we're not just fucking putting two pillars back there.
Well, it's not, people are acting as if they've cloned Lee Catamon and put them both in there or something.
Yeah, they're load-bearing midfielders rather than like human footballers that
they've got
around and do what they want.
They've got Phil Foden and Raheem Sterling on leads and they're not letting them go. You know, because it's all hands to the pump kind of thing.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I do think if you play Mason Mount, it's out of order to not also play Declan Rice. Because you miss out on the whole...
Do they know each other?
I hear that, they've got a fondness for each other.
Oh, right. Just Jim's wicked whispers.
No, well, they're big mates, aren't they, Marcus? And it's just delightful to see their happy little friendship.
You took
that completely at face value there, didn't you?
Yeah. Were you suggesting Jim was hinting at some romantic involvement between the two?
Well, I just wanted to see if Jim knew anything that I didn't, so I thought I'd give him a little prod, and turns out he knows the same as me with regards to that issue. It's true. I mean, I think that Mason Mount is a crucial player to Southgate, and Southgate's said that. And you can understand why. It wasn't that long ago when there was this sort of a little campaign of hate against Mason Mount because it seemed as if Mason Mount, when he's called up for England, insisted that Jack Grealish didn't play.
It was this odd
sort of situation.
When Mason Mount went on loan to Derby and started doing really well, there's a real, real buzz about him and people were really excited about it. But I think people got bored of it along the way, perhaps because Grealish is a little bit more eye-catching. But as is so important in international football, Mount, he delivers, doesn't he? And he's not let Southgate down. And he plays in a number of positions and looks completely at home in all of them. So, I mean, he's a huge, huge bonus coming into the tournament.
Yeah, it was interesting what Southgate said when he said, I was saying in autumn he's a very good player. Now Thomas Tuchel picks him, everyone agrees. When Frank Lampard did it, it didn't count for some reason, which is unlike Southgate to say something like that. But I think that actually Southgate, now he's picked Grealish a couple of times where so many people were crying out for Grealish to be picked. I mean, he didn't feature him, make it all about him, but but that's more likely the reason why people were kind of having a go at Mount rather than, oh, if Tuchel rates him, then he's obviously decent.
Yeah. I think whatever the Lampard criticism was at the time, or not even criticism, but whatever the slant of it was at the time was a bit like, I think Mount was seen as Lampard's favourite, you know, a bit of a teacher's pet, not through Mount's fault, not even through Lampard's fault, really. Mm-hmm. And I think we've seen with both Grealish and Mount now that they can play in the same team. So I think that particular debate is put to bed. And I think you've touched on quite a good point there with regards to why Southgate is saying this now, because I think he was realising he... I mean, this was a way that he could do it without doing down Grealish.
Yeah.
Whereas before, it was always framed as one of those two.
Exactly, yeah.
And I think, you know, you look at that midfield yesterday, and while I don't necessarily agree that it was particularly defensive because of things I've already gone through, mm-hmm. I think if Grealish was fit and Grealish was there, you could play Mount in that three and have Grealish mm-hmm. as the one kind of further forward out wide, and you wouldn't lose anything. And I think if you look at the way they both operate, the fact that Mount is a bit more active without the ball mm-hmm. and that Grealish is able to use the ball in very different ways, you know, it's quite exciting. And it's so very English that the end of that result yesterday, all I could think was, I'm going to be really pissed off about maybe two players who aren't going to the Euros.
Yeah.
And I think I do. I think a lot of people are, and mm-hmm. I think they just have to deal with
but
it.
But I think that's a good point, Vish, because if you look, I think this is why people are getting excited. And don't worry, ladies and gentlemen, we are here to very much ramp up that excitement. No, to try and, you know, just to calm everybody down, because, you know, England are not the favourites going into this tournament. France and Belgium are better than England. Mm. I mean, France have proved that by winning the World Cup, and Belgium have proved that in the games they played against England, despite England winning 2-1. I would put England perhaps in that, you know, bracket of teams where you think, well, they could do something, but you won't see. You know, I'd put them in, say, with Germany, Italy, maybe. Italy, the results look decent, and probably Spain as well.
Yeah.
That kind of group, I don't know where I'd put them in that pecking order, but let's not dwell on that too much. But if you look at the players, as you say, which are going to miss out, much has been made of Trent Alexander-Arnold not being in this squad. Mm. And perhaps the reasons for this sort of talk about his dip in form might be a little bit unfair, because he's been pretty good this calendar year.
Southgate has said as well that he's getting back to form, and he is en route to yeah. get back to the form he needs to be in for his club to get mm-hmm. into the squad for the Euro. So that's encouragement for him. And I think it's actually true as well. I think that's mm-hmm. a fair observation. He's definitely picked up.
But then who do you drop? Because, you know, Kyle Walker can play right back, and he can play in a back three. Mm. And Southgate...
Walker's in there as a definite.
Walker's in there as a definite. Trippier has performed under Southgate before, and he's currently playing... He's obviously, he had his ban, but he's been playing a large part in... or certainly a part in Atletico Madrid, who, you know... Last time I checked, we're top of La Liga. Yeah. They're there or thereabouts. They're in the hunt for the title there. Reece James is the one who... You get some players who come along. I know he didn't play against Albania, but you get players that come along and they immediately look at home
yeah.
in an England shirt or international football, and they look the part, and you think, you know what, straight away there's something about this guy.
Yeah.
And he looks like one of those players, which I think has thrown a cat among the right backs.
Massively, because I think Walker will stay because he's got that versatility mm-hmm. and Southgate likes him to bomb on from a three and give you that extra bonus.
Yep.
I think he trusts experience, and he's also very, very pragmatic, which you need to be at international level, as we've said so many times. So I think Trippier is almost a cert as well. Mm-hmm. And the problem for Trent Alexander-Arnold is... Reece James looks like the sort of player that's not going to put a foot wrong between now and then. So that's, he's going to have to really, really go some. But then what Trent Alexander-Arnold gives you on form,
wow, this is it. This is
an absolute assist machine that no one can really compete with. So,
mm-hmm. But that particular position, there's a huge amount of competition, of course, as there is at left back or the left side. Chilwell's come in and perform well. Shaw was excellent. Mm-hmm. What a cross for that Harry Kane goal. Beautiful goal. And then, of course, if he did play with wing-backs, then Bukayo Saka's had a great season at Arsenal. And so there will be, Vish, as you just mentioned there will be a few players who will miss out. You know, again, if you look, I was trying to figure this out, how many attackers and how many defenders and blah, 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 blah. We could end up with Rashford or Sancho or Grealish missing out.
Yeah.
Of the 11?
No, of the squad.
You reckon?
That's what I mean. I think that England have a lot of... Because if you think about your midfield in terms of central midfielders, then those who can play in front or out wide, you know, there's only so much that you can do. And there will be one or two big high-profile losses in this squad.
To fit Jesse Lingard in. Because he will not be missing out.
Damn right. You see, again, Lingard's coming out of nowhere. But anyway, I'm sort of getting slightly off topic. Let's go back to the actual match itself. It was good to see Kane getting on the score sheet, Fish.
Yeah, it was. I found some of the talk about his position play really weird, given that we're like 29, 30 games in the Premier League season, Premier League season where he's been scoring goals and assists by dropping deep.
Mm.
And the same pundits who watch him in the Premier League were like, well, what's he doing? Mm-hmm. You know, why is he dropping deep?
Yeah.
And it's weird because if you look at the profound effect he's had on, say, someone like Son by dropping deep.
Yes.
And if you think of the players England have at their disposal mm-hmm. who operate from out wide and come in and are, you know, basically want space mm-hmm. where an attacker usually is so that they can either flood it or kind of, you know, mm-hmm. use that, use it as a focal point. And for someone like Kane, who is, as I said, produced the assist he has done, I thought it was like incredibly, it wasn't even short-sighted. It was almost like willfully naive. It was like they, the centre forward position has changed immeasurably and it's changed over the course of Harry Kane's career. Mm-hmm. And we see it with Kane now that he has got this string to his bow, a very effective string to his bow. And one that England can now actually use because of those wide players. And, you know, the wide players you listed who might not go to the Euros.
Well, I mean, one of you...
No, of course, yeah. I'm just saying, but, you know, that's the attacking talent we have in those positions.
On that, just pick your 23 and you will see that you'll have to leave out. That's the sort of point I'm making. Anyway, carry on,
But, you know, that kind of attacking threat out wide is all the more reason why having Kane doing what he's doing for Spurs, for England, is so valuable. And he still gets in goals like that. And he still, as I sent a photo to the group of that moment in the last 5 minutes where he double-footed two defenders to try and get a second goal there.
Oh, yeah. He looks at the referee like he'd spat on his halo, didn't he? Absolutely furious.
I wasn't backing into them. I think I've tried to stamp that out again. It is interesting. I mean, I do take the point sometimes that Kane wasn't there for a cross into the box or something, which is obviously, you know, a player like Ian Wright, who's... punditing, you know, with his type of play is going to have a problem with that. But there is I think that's why it's crucial to have Sterling in there who can run beyond Kane. Because as you say, look what he does with Son at club level. And it's an argument for, say, someone like Rashford to be in there as well. Again, great runners, you know, we saw that. I mean, I know it was 3 years or how many years ago now, but again, away to Spain when England won 3-2, you know, you saw the link-up play with Kane dropping deep and it was just there. That was personified beautifully or played out beautifully. But it is interesting having Phil Foden in the starting lineup, Jim. I know you're a big proponent and rightfully so, because he's an excellent player and provides such a different option. And people now, it's not a question of in the squad. It's really he's starting, isn't he?
Yeah, I would think so. It's just the way he... makes the most of the time he has in tight spaces, and that is so, so crucial for dictating the tempo of the game. Mm-hmm. If something isn't happening and you can get it back to a player like that can maybe unpick a lock on, you know, on a game effectively and just advance the team's position through that really, really tight control, it just gives you such an advantage. And I feel like we say this about every single good young English midfielder, but England don't have another player like him.
Yeah.
And I think that you just gain so much from having him in your team that he's going to be very difficult to displace.
Yeah.
I mean,
and looks okay. He's got that fearlessness as well.
He does have that fearlessness, but I think you can pick, like, you can pick a lot of variations of England starting 11s that we'd all be happy with. And that at the same time, everyone would be unhappy with, because you can't get all of the players that you want
this is it. And just before we move on to England, you know, from England, I quite liked it, because I often sort of say, you know, I'd like to play a 3-5-3. Well, I wish we could have an extra man in there.
Yeah.
But actually, that's what Rice gives you, dropping in between the two centre-halves, which is a classic thing that we see, which it kind of, you do give yourself that option of the back three when defending. Or when you're on the attack. Rice can sort of give you that, because as we saw in the early stages, and England will need a bit of defensive solidity, and Rice might be quite crucial in front of that back four.
I'm just trying to think of how we're going to fuck this up.
Yeah.
We're going to call up the wrong players, aren't we?
Mm. Yeah.
Like someone is going to get like one number wrong, and you know, Jonathan Sancho is going to come up and he's a plumber from Hemel Hempstead.
Phil Foden will be sitting on the bench, looking at Jesse Lingard taking selfies on the pitch, thinking, what do I have to do here? That's the fear, isn't it? That Southgate will revert to what he's done in previous tournaments out of a bit too much pragmatism.
But I think Southgate, it's strange, isn't it? Because when you look at it, like, we know how hard it is for club teams, even with their contact time with players, which is so constant, we see how hard it is for them to play like an attacking style of football. Mm. And I think what we have from Southgate is, you know, he's got a better idea. And if you bear in mind how things went in 2018, took a pragmatic side and you know, took them to the semis, I think he's aware of the talent and is working it out. I don't have that fear that he'll necessarily revert to type or, you know, go play a bit insularly when we get to get to the tournament itself. But I do worry that we might not get the most out of certain players. Mm. I would say I'm worried, actually, we won't get the most out of Foden because it really relies on a certain system to allow him to to drift, I suppose.
Yeah. Sure.
And I reckon we could see a whole tournament go by without Sancho starting a game, which is mad.
Yeah.
Which would be mad. Sorry, it hasn't happened yet. Why am I getting annoyed about it?
Sure, but then, but this is the problem. This is the headache that, that Southgate has. I think Phil Foden is just probably relieved that he's not in the England under 21 setup, though. Carrying on from Luke Moore's comments recently on the Football Ramble. AD Boothroyd led the boys to another defeat in the under 21, Euro under 21. 2-0 defeat to Portugal. Portugal got a decent side, they've got good players, but it is very disappointing from England's point of view. And they are now, I think they need to beat Croatia by 2 goals or more and hope Portugal beat Switzerland. I think that's what it is. But either way, they're in a very precarious situation, which is a shame because they've got talent in that side.
Quite a tough ask for a team that haven't registered a shot on goal in open play.
Yeah, it's going to have to be a bit of a sea change.
Yeah, yeah. You're not going to score more than 2 goals like that, are you?
Yeah.
Well, how is he not starting Eze?
I love that before. You message us saying, might watch the under-21s and you're like, I saw Eze on the bench. Nah, it's a no from me.
And then when he brought...
I'm out, and here's why I'm out.
And then when he brought Eze on, he took Emil Smith-Rowe off, who was one of the best players. I mean, obviously it's a low bar, but yeah.
Well, as we say, you can't play everybody, can you?
No. He's not playing anybody.
But you can play some people. Jim,
you can play some of the people some of the some time. Of the
yeah, maybe that's what it is. Sorry, everybody in Ireland. We're going to now talk about Luxembourg winning 1-0 in Ireland, of course. Ireland, they lost to the 98th ranked side in the world. And what a goal it was to win the game, Jim.
I mean, Rodriguez, the guy that scored the goal.
He completely
had a shot earlier on as well, didn't he? Like, very, very, like, nearly lobbed the keeper from quite a way out.
Yes. Someone nearly did a Joe Bryan. From the free kick. Did you see that? He nearly caught the keeper off guard. But what a goal it was to win the game.
Did a Joe Bryan.
What's that?
we both knew what you meant, but barely.
Yeah.
Give us another season, we wouldn't have a clue what you were talking about.
All right,
about.
Gary McAllister then. Name another one of that type of free kick. I can't think of any, but Joe Bryan did it so well.
Oh, Ronaldinho. I suppose not quite.
Not quite the same. I'm thinking caliber, same angle.
Is that what you're saying?
Well... The ultimate stage, the playoff final, the most important game in football.
Yeah, you know what? I'll give you that.
Thank you.
Give you that.
All right. But yes, it was very, very poor. From my goodness.
Do you know what was great? It was the players and the manager who, as they spoke afterwards, were like, you know, full credit to them. Then followed by, but it's Luxembourg.
Yeah.
They did great, but we lost to them.
Seamus Coleman, we got beaten 1-0 at home to Luxembourg. That's no disrespect to Luxembourg. Yeah,
that's a lot of disrespect to ourselves, effectively what he's saying there, isn't
it? The thing is, though, like, how do you say this? And let's be honest, they're the 98th ranked side in the world. They have a population of under 1 million. Well, so do Iceland, so maybe population. But it plays into it, of course. It's a damning loss, and Kenny is under so much pressure. They finally scored against Serbia the other day, and to lose 3-2 away to Serbia when Mitrovic is pulling out goals like that, that's no disgrace. Serbia are a decent side, even a top side could go there and lose. So you think, okay, well they got the goals. Luxembourg at home, now's the chance. And my goodness, you know, it really is rock bottom. And I believe there's a discussion, you know, in Ireland about the styles of play. You know, you have the pragmatic approach that we've seen, obviously, go all the way back to Jack Charlton, you know, but more recently with Mick McCarthy. Martin O'Neill used to play sort of counter-attacking again. As I was saying before, it's not like Mick McCarthy's weighed up the options and thought, well, we could knock it about, but no, I think we'll just play pragmatic.
Yeah.
He's a pragmatic coach. We know this. And that's one of the reasons why they perhaps got him in. Kenny's trying to produce different football. They're trying to play a possession base. He's maybe trying to think sort of long-term, all the rest of it. It's not working in the short term.
No.
And it's now a chat there. Do you think, bloody hell, what do we do? Do you write off this campaign straight away? It seems very early to do so, but with a game which should have been guaranteed 3 points has now gone by the wayside. What do you do here?
Well, I mean, a result in the next game is so, so crucial, isn't it? So it's an interesting time for him because...
But do you stick with Kenny's system, which is clearly...
Do you mean do they stick with him as the manager, or do you mean does he stick with his own system?
Well, yeah, I mean, essentially, you know, if that's what Kenny wants to do... then do you change it up, or do you think, well, let's give him this campaign just to see, because it would be a shame if what he's trying to do is not being implemented with, he's not got a great group of players as well.
No, I mean, well, that's the key thing, isn't it? It's not a strong squad at all. They are in a lull in terms of the talent they have. They've got very few sort of Premier League or top level players in there, and a lot of them, they're at the lower end of the Premier League, and they're not always starters as well. It's like it is a tough situation that they're in through nobody's fault. So it'd be interesting. I mean, there's really nothing to lose at this point, is there? So if they are committed to playing a bit more of an expansive game long term, then maybe you do look at this campaign as a write-off and you give them the chance to turn it around. You never know. If they even get close to qualifying, that'll be signs that, you know, there is a future here. But for a country with the sort of squad they have available, with the population they have as well, where you don't get these, you don't get a Robbie Keane come along every 2 weeks, do you know what I mean? Is it actually viable? It's a difficult one. I think personally, I mean, it's hard to put yourself in the shoes of Irish supporters, but maybe you would want to go back to pragmatism, because ultimately you want your team to be at a tournament. That's the most important thing, because it's one of the best things about football, and they've had such brilliant memories there.
Well, they have, and recent ones as well. You know, European Championships, you know, qualifying for them and so on. I mean, it wasn't that long ago where they lost a knockout game to France 2-1. I mean, I'd take that for England.
You
know, but that
you
seems,
have in the past.
Yeah, no, we've taken a few of those.
Whether it's my choice or not. But that seems a long, long, long time ago now. I mean, Miguel Delaney said this was the worst result in Irish history, which is a strong statement, but one could possibly argue with it. When you look at the stats, Luxembourg's fourth away win in Euros and World Cup qualifying out of 125 matches. They've lost 111 of those ones. I mean, Ireland have won three competitive matches since October 2017. You know, since the 5-1 defeat to Denmark in the playoff, you know, they have scored just 11 goals in 21 competitive matches. It does not look good.
No. We should say about Luxembourg that, I'm not going to lie, I watched extended highlights of that game, and I was kind of impressed.
They've improved, definitely.
So I looked it up. They were 186th. 15 years ago, and a couple of years ago, they got into the 80s before they dropped back down to 98 now. And now I appreciate that, you know, when you're making up that distance, you know, from the you know, close to 200 to into the top 100, you know, those steps come a little bit quicker, not least because you're in competition with teams you're playing in different systems and this, that, and the other. But I would say that, you know, so I was trying to read whatever background I can get on them. And it sounds like they made a conscious effort to basically choose from a smaller pool. Now, obviously, that is part of being a country the size of Islington, but you know, it does. You watched that yesterday, and you're like, this looks like a group of players who have played with each other, who know each other's strengths
very much. So.
And you didn't see that with Ireland, did you?
No.
And I think, given the way things have gone with Ireland over the last few years, they've used quite a few players in various different situations. I know we've got a few of our constants that we'll all know, but, you know, even the way that Kenny was talking about, Stephen Kenny, pardon me, was talking about how we wanted to play in the lead up to this week and the idea that they're going towards a grander plan. It sounded like he had the impression that he was willing to give anyone to go to see what would stick. And then, you know, there's a lot to be said for that, because as we saw with Northern Ireland, you get in a situation where players show themselves to be good at international level, even if they, well, particularly because they don't necessarily get the opportunity at club level. I mean, it's the head says you should just persist with it, because you're going to get these teething pains. But if you're an Irish supporter and you're looking at that result, even despite what I said about Luxembourg, you've got to think, God, maybe is it worth it? Is it worth this kind of heartache?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Right, people of Ireland, we're going to stop there. Okay, we're finished talking about that one. We're going to go for a quick break.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Hello, I'm Clive Anderson, and My Seven Wonders is my podcast where I sit down with some fascinating guests and ask them one simple question. If you could pick your own seven wonders of the world, what would they be? The guests' choices lead us to some interesting tales, whether it's Omar Jalili being stopped by New York Customs.
They brought me in for the interview. They said, so what are you doing this? I'm doing a show with Whoopi Goldberg. And the guy said, no, I'm doing a show with Whoopi Goldberg, as if you are. And I said, excuse me? I am. That's why I'm going there. And he's doing a show with Whoopi Goldberg. I can't believe my ears.
Olivia Lee eating 120-pound apples at Soho House.
I mean, it is hideously expensive. If I'm just going there once and taking an apple, it's the most expensive apple you'll ever eat.
Or David Baddiel talking about his dad's dementia.
The other thing he could remember are his regular insults. So still, when you leave my dad, if you say, I'm off, he will say, you've been off for years. And it's really comforting that he could still abuse you in this way.
Forget the Taj Mahal and the Lighthouse of Alexandria. The wonders of the world we talk about are much more unique. Listen to My Seven Wonders now on your favourite podcast app.
My Seven Wonders with Clive Anderson is a Stakhanov production.
I'm quite a placid guy.
I imagine he was after that result. Sorry, last mention, I promise you. Welcome back to the Football Ramble, everybody. Now, let's have a Betway 4 to Score update. See how we got on Betway's 4 to Score this weekend. Entry to Betway's 4 to Score is free each week. Pick the first goal scorer in Betway's 4 selected matches for your chance to win the weekly £50,000 jackpot. Make sure your selections are submitted before the first game. Further T's and C's apply. Game 1. We had Norway versus Turkey. Kate picked Erling Haaland. The result was, of course, Ozan Tufan. Forgive pronunciation. Game 2 was Serbia versus Portugal. Andy picked Andre Silva. The result was Diogo Jota. Game 3, Albania versus England. Vish picked John Stones, trying to channel the spirit of Luke Moore and his predictions.
He had a chance as well, didn't he?
He did have a chance, but the result was Harry Kane. And Game 4, Israel versus Scotland. Luke picked Che Adams. The result was Dor Peretz. We'll be back with another round of Betway's 4 to Score on the preview show this Friday. Right, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for emails. And today's jingle comes from Alex Christian with his As I Rambled the Streets of Islington. That's in North London.
As I rambled the streets of Islington, I chanced on a little hairy boy. He told me tales of Svenigans and sang of his old Uncle Roy. He gave me a brown paper envelope. Desperate, I heard him entreat. Oh, troubadour, write us a jingle. 'Cause anything's better than peace. As I rambled the streets of Islington, I chanced on a little hairy boy. He paid me a bribe to write you a song.
Here it is.
Right, I'm going to stop that there. The reason why, there's still a minute to go.
Of just
like
you
it.
Being a hairy boy.
Just, yeah. Perhaps maybe we'll play that at the end.
All right.
I mean, we put out the cry for the jingle because Pete's maybe a bit too long. That's a minute and 57 seconds.
Imagine if you write a song. Imagine if someone requests you write a song and you send it in, you know, high production value, everything. You've had to sit down and write the lyrics, do the music yourself, probably. Mm-hmm. COVID times.
Yeah.
And you hear it being played, and then someone cuts it off halfway through.
Yeah, the person it's about
yes,
gets
yeah.
uncomfortable with, frankly, the reality of how hairy he is.
That's not true. It was the
there
length
again.
Of the song, okay? That was Alex Christian. We all thoroughly enjoyed that.
Yeah.
No, you can't say that when you stopped his song halfway through.
Don't look at me like that, Vish. You've got an email to read.
Oh, can I read all of it, or should I read half of it?
You'll bloody read all of it.
This is from Oliver Thornton Hale. It's quite good background music, actually.
It is, yeah.
My father is a painter and decorator and was working in Leicester just a few weeks before they were crowned Premier League champions. While he was packing away for the day, he spots N'Golo Kante rolling past in his white Mini Cooper.
Oh.
He had his windows down and stereo high. Guess what he was listening to?
Go on.
Informer by Snow.
Of course he was.
The thought of the nicest guy in football cruising along, chilling with the snowman, brings a special kind of joy to me.
Informer. You know, that's exactly
you know,
boom, boom, down.
You know, Snow's Canadian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, big time.
Incredible.
Mm. Don't come at me with Snow trivia.
I love the thought of him in a Mini Cooper. But I can't get the idea out of my head that he'd be chasing down a ball, like trying to win a tackle.
No, in my head, because he's so energetic, it's like the Flintstones. He's actually running. He's not driving. There's no engine in it. He's just, oh, I can get there quicker. So
yeah, but it's a perfect car. It's small, compact, very nippy, covers a lot of ground, all
it's,
that.
It's really just a protective shell.
Yeah, I think so.
find space well. Yeah.
There you go. Absolutely. Good miles to the gallon, I assume.
Yeah. No. K-Dog's been in touch.
Oh, K-Dog.
Presumably his real name. Mm-hmm. On the subject of Liverpool's regional delicacy, we've had a lot of people get in touch on this. Mm-hmm. Boys, you've embarrassed yourselves there.
We have.
We call them Scousers because of their dish. Scouse. It's a kind of lamb / beef potato stew. That's as in either or, not lamb, piss and beef. I presume. I wasn't aware of it.
We have embarrassed ourselves.
No, hold on. I know what Scouse is.
No, oh, you weren't there when Andy, Jim and I said
no,
this.
No, but it's a bit like you've embarrassed yourself.
Yeah, right. Okay,
I'm
that's
level.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
That's what I meant.
Yeah.
Don't worry.
Just making it clear, yeah.
Yeah.
Just like Jim and I would have liked to listen to the whole song.
Yeah, would have loved it, actually. It was was really into
you
it.
You can listen
you know,
to
we'll
it.
We'll never get to hear that song for the first time now.
Because he would be listening to the podcast. Like, he'd probably skip to it, to be honest. Skipped halfway through. When did they do emails? Probably about then. Skipped to it. Heard the start of it.
He's getting
heard us sniggering.
No, he's got two playouts. I gave the radio edit first, and we're going to have the full version at the end.
I'm just saying he's going to be
upset. Love that on the radio. So, this song's great, isn't it? Just tune in for another half an hour, and you can hear the rest of it.
Imagine if they did that to Candle in the Wind. Well, it goes on for another minute, but you get the point. She's dead.
We're all sad about it.
Absolutely.
Here's the weather.
Anyway. K-Dog, you're right. We should have known what scale. I think K-Dog's from Frankfurt. Do they have any delicacies or any dishes? No, I don't think. Can't think of anything. Anyway, show at footballramble.com to get your jingles in. Do keep them under a minute. But there we are. Right. Elsewhere in World Cup qualifiers, Israel drew 1-1 at home with the Bonnie Scots. Do you know what was so pleasing about that game is when Perret scored, fans cheered.
Yes, lovely.
There were a few games around Europe that had fans in.
Georgia was another one.
And it's amazing how much you've missed it. You know how much you've missed it. And then you see it and it's like, oh, I missed it even more than I realised.
There was a point when it was 1-1 where an Israel player, I forget, had a header at the back post, which hit the side netting. And there was a genuine, thought it was in cheer from certain sections of the crowd, and that was wonderful.
Yeah, and it was the right time of it.
Yes,
it wasn't the sound guy going, I was a bit early with that one or a bit late. It was perfect. Che Adams started for Scotland, of course.
Got an assist as well.
He did, he made an impact. And you can see that he gives them something else up top there, which is a good sign for Scotland. I mean, they've drawn two games, Scotland, of course, their first two games in this group. they seem a bit disappointed, and I understand that, but I don't think this is all doom and gloom. I mean, away to Israel is a tricky fix. You know, Scotland played them recently, of course. And
played them a lot, haven't they?
They have, yeah. And they've all been quite stodgy, sort of tricky stalemates and whatnot. And Austria, you know, they obviously drew at home with them. You know, they're not a bad side as well. Of course, they would have... If you got 4 points from those games, then you're away. But, you know, two draws, it's not all doom and gloom, is it?
No, not at all. But I did watch the game yesterday and think that Scotland should have been a bit more...
On the front foot?
Yeah, because you look through those players and you see, like, they all play for teams which have more of the ball than not. Even Scott McTominay is someone, you know, United player, this obviously counter-attacking style of play, but he's someone who gets the ball and gives it, you know, and charges forward sometimes recklessly, but, you know, more often than not, he knows about forward progression, basically. And I saw that yesterday, and I thought they let Israel play a little bit too much. And they got it right at the start of the second half, didn't they?
Yeah, they did,
Scotland.
Yeah.
And they were much better, and they gave them something to worry about. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if it's just... you know, Steve Clark's doing his bit, and you know they did well to overcome Serbia for the Euro qualification. But I did think that there needs to be a slight change, and maybe it's a mindset. But I just sort of saw that, and especially you, as I said, you know the way they got back into the game, you wonder if they could have done that from the start.
Yeah, I mean, there's no wins in five now, which is Scotland's worst winless run since 2008.
So there is some doom and some gloom.
Yes, but this feels differently though. And I think that the excitement of qualifying for the Euros has given them a bit of a wave of optimism. And I think as, was it McCoist was saying, you know, when they went 2-1 down at home to Austria before McGinnie Ester, as he's now known, scored that lovely goal. They were saying, you know, Scotland would have probably lost that game previously. They've gone behind. Obviously, you don't want to kind of go behind, but they've come back. I'm still positive for them. They've got a tough job. Obviously, Denmark are in the group as well, and they, you know, smashed 8 goals the other night. You know, so it's a tough job. But I think, you know, they play the Faroe Islands on Wednesday. Get a win against them, because if you don't, then see you later. That's I think that is fair to say. And then you know, pick up the pace again. The last side in the British Isles we talk about would be Northern Ireland, who lost 2-1 to the US in a friendly. And we want to talk about this because of Niall McGinn's goal.
Another McGinnie, I think.
I mean, it was Van Basten-esque.
It was.
It was an absolute peach.
For me, though, it was one of those goals that was ruined by the commentary. Because the co-commentator, I forget exactly who it was, but he did that thing going, he will never score another goal like that in his life. Yeah. That is the pinnacle of his career. Yeah. He will never hit it that sweetly again. Like, this is a joke. Yes. This guy's a clodder. What's he doing? He might as well retire now. What a prick. Like, it's... You know, just get into this.
You got
hole.
Lucky there,
like,
Sam.
Like, yeah, it's just let us enjoy him enjoying it.
Yeah, it's the stopping it halfway through the song. No, I don't even. He did that thing where he scored, and it was only going to be a consolation, but he couldn't stop himself from smiling. It was that was really, really great. Yeah,
It was a beauty, absolute beauty. I tell you what, though, I mean, the US are building a nice side, though, aren't they? They won what, 8 out of 9.
Ridiculous, isn't it? I was. You look at those players, and you're like, oh, he plays for them. He plays for Bayern Munich. He's over at Barcelona.
Yeah.
And then Tim Ream gets the ball.
Hang about. What?
I just had this image
of
them.
He's a Premier League player.
Tim Ream. Sort of. Yeah. I have this idea of them all like sitting at lunch and being like, God, how is it over there? Yeah, brilliant. Yeah. Like, you know, Bayern, we're just smashing everyone. Like, where about where you are? It's quite fun. Going well.
We've only got 3 stands, but you know.
Just going to Tim Ream, like, yeah, how are you doing? You were doing all right. Yeah, you don't have to check. Don't put your phone away. You don't have to check.
Yeah.
You're just getting loads of minutes, and Andy Robinson. No, you're not.
Guy who keeps scoring, Mitrovic, in the qualifiers. Yeah, I play with him.
Yeah,
we both sit on the bench. You know,
tend to switch off about halfway through sometimes.
Jim, come on. Tim Ream's a fine man, fine footballer. They were in Northern Ireland's group, by the way. Switzerland versus Lithuania. It was delayed after one of the goals. The goalpost was found to be too big.
Yeah.
That's
not even the weirdest thing about it. Apparently a police officer was called to help. Yeah. What sort of heartbeat style kind of village is this?
Is this like, Ed, where, do you remember that show, Ed? Where it was about this guy who owned a bowling alley who was also the town's lawyer.
No.
Do you remember? remember this.
No, I don't remember this. Was it good? Because, I mean, the show's Barry. Good, and the show Barry and the show Dave are both absolutely excellent.
I watched it, and then
Ed has got good pedigree. If
I didn't like it
for a bloke.
Turned it off halfway through.
Yeah, of course you did. But
speaking of oversight.
You turned off in front of him, did you?
Yeah. Speaking of oversight, the Belgian FA apparently forgot to book a referee for their under-21s game against Standard Liège. Of course, Belgian side. So the Liège second goalkeeper had to referee with their fitness coach and physio running the line using jackets instead of flags. Just as well, that's not a proper, like, you know, they were playing another country's under 21s. That would have been particularly poor.
Yeah.
Have you ever had to do that?
Once I run the line.
Yeah.
It's annoying.
Terrible,
no,
isn't it?
I've never had to do that.
Just get people shouting at you.
I bet.
Uh huh.
And it's bad enough to do the job anyway. It looks hard and really unrewarding.
I'd imagine if you did that job, you would upset Cristiano Ronaldo for not giving a goal that was about a metre over the line.
I would certainly be in danger of doing that.
Portugal drew 2-2 with Serbia and Belgrade. And Cristiano Ronaldo's temper tantrums are the stuff
They're
of toddlers.
Better. Stuff of toddlers.
Well, it is that sort of stamp your feet and.
He doesn't cry anymore.
Yeah.
But it's like he's grown out of that. It's like he's in the terrible twos.
Yeah.
And it is. Stamping of feet, as you're saying.
Very much so, yeah.
Around.
I mean, it was a clear goal.
Yeah.
I understand that. But the way he takes it so personally, it's like, how dare you deny me something I did? And again, well, I get the frustration, and he is right. But the body language, like some people would be like head in the hands and be like, oh, ref, I can't believe it. This is ridiculous. It's the way his response.
Did you see what he put on Instagram?
Go on.
No. Ronaldo's sense of perspective is amazing to me.
Mm-hmm.
So he said after the game on Instagram, there are difficult times to deal with, especially when we feel that an entire nation is being harmed.
Yeah. I wasn't sure if he's aware of the entire nation sometimes when it is very much he plays for himself.
Indeed.
Obviously, that benefits the nation completely. But the Portugal manager, Fernando Santos, claimed that the referee apologised to him and told him he was embarrassed.
That's a bit... I don't like that from a referee. You think the officials should stick together. Like, apologise. Don't be like, God, he's shitting it.
Mm. Yeah, I think Santos would probably say, don't apologise to me. It's Ronaldo, you've got to apologise. Look at him. Look how upset he is.
That was a Hall of Fame tiff. I reckon that would rival the... you know, remember the one he had against Nani, against Spain, where he kind of chimped it over Casillas and Nani headed it in and it was
That was...
remarkable.
It would have been an absolute beauty and it was a shame. But yes, again, the tantrum and all the rest of it is there to see for all. But I suppose a decent point, really, for Serbia. Considering they should have lost the game.
Considering the ball crossed the line. Yeah.
And Mitro became the all-time top scorer, didn't he?
He did.
To do it the other
Good
day.
Boy. Tim Ream's teammate.
It's a lot of fun today, isn't it?
Yeah, it's too much, isn't it?
Well, not enough, I'd say. Gentlemen, there's been more protests about the World Cup happening in Qatar. Denmark and the Netherlands became the latest teams to express their stance on the Qatar World Cup and the country's reported human rights abuses. FIFA have said that they won't take action against the protests, saying FIFA believes in the freedom of speech and in the power of football as a force for good. Interesting that Joshua Kimmich said that the calls to boycott the tournament have come 10 years too late. I mean, he is right.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you make of this, Fish? I mean, the German side, they had obviously, you know, in a recent game written on their T-shirts as a collective, you know, protest.
I don't know. I've got two points on this. Mm. One being that kind of football, and specifically, I suppose, footballers are caught in this almost bind of hypocrisy to an extent, like, which is not really of their making. You know, a lot of football clubs have links with such regimes, and some of them are more pronounced with ownership, and others a bit more discreetly. And you know, like hands up, you know, I think some of the media are in similar binds when you look at kind of who owns what and where. And then at the same time, I don't think that's a reason why you shouldn't do something about it, why they shouldn't make this kind of protest. Mm-hmm. You can't be bound by a fear of being seen as hypocritical, because I think a lot of these regimes rely on the fact that, you know, it's not like some kind of Marvel cinematic universe where like a regime wants, you know, universal fear. Mm-hmm. A lot of these people get by on apathy and you don't want to, you know, keep going with that.
It's the nature of sports washing, really.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is a tricky one, though, Jim. I mean, are you going to protest, Jim? Are you going to do your own...
Yeah, I might do, as long as it doesn't annoy anyone, I suppose. It'll still be allowed here. But you're absolutely right, Fish. I think the fact that, you know, the hypocrisy is an interesting thing, isn't it? Because ultimately, you know, you'd rather a player speak out and be called a hypocrite than do absolutely nothing. And Amnesty International have said that they don't want the tournament moved or postponed, which is really useful to know, because that will be that will be what's thrown at players. Oh, if you're still going to play in it, of course all of these teams are still going to play in it. It's the World Cup. It's a huge thing for their careers. It would be amazing if everybody down tools and said, no, we're not going to do it, but it simply isn't going to happen. We have to look at what's going to happen in reality. So I think these protests are really, really good because... I think there's a bit of a groundswell of it, and if every team if every team makes some form of protest at the tournament, then the end game has to be that the powers that be in Qatar listen and that they fix the problems that are being protested about. But I can't see that happening, because a representative from Qatar, from the World Cup, said recently, since construction of the stadiums began in 2014, there have been 3 work-related fatalities and 35 non-work-related deaths. The FC has investigated each case, learning lessons to avoid any repeat in the future. They're making a lot of noise about how actually the World Cup's been great because it's allowed them to sort of look at their practices and sort some of them out. But The Guardian reported that in the last 10 years since they won the bid, there have been 6,500 migrant worker deaths. So that seems a bit of a discrepancy
that figure is shocking.
So clearly a lot of work has to be done, and that the work has to be done has to be properly acknowledged, and that isn't happening. So the more noise they made, the better, as far as I'm concerned. I did also enjoy the fact that Kimmich said that he described Germany's protest as a very spontaneous shirt activity. And I think we need more of those.
Indeed we do. Yeah. So I think he's right saying 10 years too late. Yeah.
I'm kind of fascinated to see how this goes, though, because this has been something that seems to be certainly not, maybe not entirely driven by the players, but certainly obviously as the front-facing ones, they've come out and said a few things, and you know they're obviously the ones there standing with the shirts on. But like, how much consideration will players now give to where they end up? You know, what football clubs they join and stuff like that. Like, you know, Erling Haaland was one of the people standing up there for Norway wearing that shirt. Is that going to come into his thinking as to who he joins next, considering where a lot of the super clubs get their money from? And then at the same time, is that on a 20-year-old kid to have to be wary about that? Shouldn't football be policing it in their own way?
Yeah, indeed. Well, gentlemen, speaking of Germany, they beat Romania 1-0 last night to continue their perfect start to the qualifiers. It was 1-0. I mean, yes, Romania had a few moments, but Germany... should have been away, of course, but they got the 3 points nonetheless. Yogi Love's going to be leaving soon, which would be odd to see someone else coaching Germany. He's had such a great longevity. Xavi claimed that his personality would be a good fit for Barcelona, which is an interesting
one. Much does Xavi not want the Barcelona job yet? I don't think Ronnie's got too long left. I need another sap to step in there until things get better.
I need someone who has got very little recent experience of club football. I think might fall flat on his face, and I can swoop in like the knight in shining armour. But more interestingly, though, Ilkay Gundogan revealed last week that he lives in the same building as Pep Guardiola in Manchester. Presumably Gary Neville owns that building. But he said, I have given him maybe one lift home from the training ground in 5 years, and I barely see him in the building unless it's in the lift or reception. And he's really easy to deal with. He gives me my space, and I give him his. What else is he expecting?
I mean, I can just imagine
the mind boggles.
Like, you know, Gundogan at like 2 a.m. here scratching at his door. I've cracked it. I've cracked your new position.
Yeah, bits of paper slid under the door with like formations on it.
That must be so awkward.
Yeah.
I love it. Well, he's really easy to deal with. What are they dealing?
It suggests that that's not true, doesn't it?
Well,
why bring it up?
He always opens the door for me. Well, yeah, like strangers do that.
No, honestly, he's great. He never watches me sleep. I've never caught him do that once.
I love that Pep lives in like a fancy modern apartment as well. Like, imagine it in there. Just tactics boards and red string everywhere.
Oh,
like, I bet his family don't want him to live on more than one floor, because he'd just be imagining how you have like a football pitch over multiple levels. Stop.
Indeed. Well, Jim, that's exactly what we're going to do now, is we're going to stop. Thank you very much for listening to The Ramble for today. If you enjoyed the show, drop us a review on Apple or wherever you get your podcasts. It helps other listeners find the show, and we bloody love you for it. On tomorrow's show, I'm back with Pete and Andy. But thank you very much, Jim Campbell.
Thank you.
Thank you, Vidushan Handaraja.
You going to play the second half of that song now?
Alex Christian is going to play us out with this. Ah, only joking. There he is.
As I rambled the streets of Islington, I chanced on a little hairy boy.
What are you doing with your hand?
He told me tales of Svenigans and sang of his old Uncle Roy. He gave me a brown paper envelope. Desperate, I heard him entreat, oh, troubadour, write us a jingle. Cause anything's better than Pete's. As I rambled the streets of Islington, I chanced on a little hairy boy. He paid me a bribe to write you a song.
A bribe.
So here it is, hope you enjoy. I call on all you ramblers.
Here we go.
If you want to send something in, email show at woodwarramble.com with any idea or will. It could be read out by Kate Mason or Andy Luke Vistruz or Jim or Marcus or maybe Pete Donaldson. Well done if it's read out by him. As I am the stranger went our separate ways and realized I knew not his name. He lowered his voice and he told me,
Barry Grindles.
Alex Christian. That is absolutely magnificent.
Brilliant stuff. Yeah, I hope his speaking voice is like that as
he's
well.
He's got to release that. Get it to the top of the charts.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.